One.
Good morning. We are WMNF Tampa. Welcome back to Midpoint, your mid-Florida, mid-week, mid-morning source for news and public affairs from a local perspective. I'm your host, Shelley Reback, and I'm still here, and you're still here, which is a good sign for the resistance. Let's stick together. As you know, the Florida legislature is still in session, and this year they are proving particularly dangerous to all of us in Florida as DeSantis and his Republican supermajority in the legislature continue to bring fascism to Florida. Just yesterday, for example, they proposed another massive voter suppression bill and said that they were going to take it up today. It makes voter registration more difficult, requires all first-time voters, like college students, to vote in person, and it makes it easier to hide campaign financing. Let's face it, it's designed to destroy voter turnout, especially among young people, and make it even more difficult to turn things around and restore democracy in Florida. But perhaps no communities are in more danger and more openly attacked lately than the trans and LGBTQ plus communities in Florida. Drag shows, can you believe it, are being criminalized. And now Don't Say Gay has been expanded to the 8th grade, and soon the Department of Education will expand it to the 12th grade. Preferred pronouns and gender-affirming medical care for minors are banned. Books with LGBTQ themes are being removed from school libraries. And it's as if they hope to erase the entire spectrum of LGBTQ plus and trans lives right out of existence. Just late last night, for example, the Republicans in the legislature introduced another amendment to create a criminal ban on any drag in public. That means no Mrs. Doubtfire or Hair at the Straz Performing Arts Center, and no pride events at which people in drag are in public. It's crazy. According to the Williams Institute, an estimated 111,000 transgender people live in Florida, which is only about 0.5% of the state population of 22 million people. And yet Republican legislators have filed 18 bills, maybe more, maybe 19 now, targeting them and the broader LGBTQ plus community. It is clearly not just about trans kids anymore. These bills seek to regulate where trans people can go to the bathroom, whether they can access health care, and to what extent they can express themselves in public. Another bill would give judges the power to change custody agreements and to remove a child from their home if parents disagree on whether to support their transgender child. In combination with all of these hateful anti-LGBTQ measures, a new report by the Anti-Defamation League reveals anti-Semitic incidents increased 36% in 2022, the largest yearly increase since the ADL has begun measuring anti-Semitism in 1979. Likewise, anti-black violence has long been the most common American hate crime. The pattern has remained consistent since the FBI began tracking and reporting hate crimes in 1991, and black Americans have been its most frequent victims. And in June 2020, which is the last year we have the numbers for right now, the FBI data showed we had the worst month ever for anti-black hate crime. So black, transgender, and gender nonconforming people face some of the highest levels of discrimination of all transgender people. Anti-transgender bias coupled with structural racism meant that transgender people of color experienced particularly devastating levels of discrimination, with black respondents often faring worse than all others. LGBTQ immigrants are also at increased risk of violence. Living at the intersection of two marginalized groups, the LGBT population and the undocumented population, the black population, the Jewish population, it makes all of these individuals particularly vulnerable. The trauma this inflicts on our marginalized trans and LGBTQ plus communities must really be horrific. That increased mental distress may call for specialized assistance from trained counselors and therapists. So I've invited two local psychologists whose work in these multiple marginalized communities to join us here today to talk about their inherent stresses and how we as allies can support them. Dr. Danny Rosenkrantz is a licensed psychologist who specializes in Jewish LGBTQ+, mental health, LGBTQ+, and BIPOC empowerment and sexual relationship wellness. So welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Dr. Danny.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Darlene Gracia is a licensed psychologist who specializes in serving people of color, LGBTQ plus populations, and providing trans-affirming mental health care. So I'm happy to have you too, Dr. Darlene.
Hola, mucho gusto. Thank you for having me.
Great. So before we get started, let me remind all of you that you can join our conversation with my guests by calling 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. But friends, if you wait until the last 10 or 5 minutes of the show, you're unlikely to get on air. So listen carefully and join us a little earlier in the show. Both of you, my guests, specialize in LGBTQ plus and trans-affirming mental health care for people in minority and marginalized communities. Let me ask you both, why did you feel you needed to devote your practice to marginalized groups in particular? Let me start with you, Dr. Gracia.
Thank you so much. I think for me, this profession just kind of is a part of who I am. It's a huge part of my identity, and the populations that I specialize in are because they're near and dear to my heart because of my own identities. I identify as a cisgender, Latina, gay woman who immigrated from Puerto Rico when I was 5 years old. And so I understand the struggles of having to learn a new language, to try to find a new identity in a country that feels foreign to you, and trying to balance understanding the culture that you come from and trying to assimilate and grow and build into your identity the dominant culture around you so that you can not only survive but learn how to thrive. And so through those personal struggles and just my genuine care for people and humanity, I saw a path for me to become a psychologist as a way to give back to the community and really help people like me see themselves represented.
Okay. And what about you, Dr. Danny? What brought you to this particular area of psychology and therapy?
Yeah. So I would say similar to Dr. Darlene, I think it is really personal, like the personal can drive the professional when it comes to psychology. I identify as a Jewish genderqueer woman and a queer woman. And I think, you know, I've been involved in doing LGBTQ plus mental health for a long time. And that's like empowering my community has been a real passion of mine. And I think for me, growing up as a member of the Jewish community, that was always a really important part of my heart and the ways that I connected to social justice. Like Tikkun Olam is such an important value.
Tikkun Olam, that's the phrase in Hebrew meaning heal the world, right?
Yep, yep, exactly. So that was like a really big driver for me and why I started being focused on mental health empowerment for folks. And I think in recent years, I really started feeling this increased call that I needed to work at this intersection that, as you mentioned earlier, anti-Semitism has been rising and I feel it in my body. I was speaking to someone recently about those billboards that we have, the Jew Belong billboards in Tampa. And I noticed as I was driving by one recently that I got tearful and I thought, this is not normal. Like that I see that and I feel in my body a sense of safety and feeling seen. This really speaks to the impact of what we're holding when we are living at these intersections, that it is a very traumatic, painful time.
I feel the same way when I pass the beautiful new mural on 7th Avenue that was painted by Ybor artist Michelle Sawyer and splashes the word anti-fascist in big letters on the wall. I feel the same kind of emotion when I see that. Let me ask you both, how is all this new legislation coming out of the Florida legislature affecting this part of your practice or your clients? You know, are you hearing more or different kinds of stressors from the people that you counsel?
Oh, absolutely. I would say absolutely. Would you agree?
Yeah, my metaphoric phone won't stop ringing. I mean, I get calls and emails daily for clients seeking specifically support, mental health support, for their LGBTQ struggles, and particularly with the intersectionality of other BIPOC identities, because of not just the minority stress and trauma that they're already dealing with, but the onslaught of this hostile environment is really affecting their lives in every way, to the point that I have several conversations with clients a day about the possibility that they need to leave the state, mm-hmm. and they're looking for resources on how to get out because they don't see a way out of this.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, it seems like it came upon us, you know, well, certainly with the ascendancy of Trump. But, you know, I really feel like I'm so surprised. I don't know. It must not be true of you because this is your practice. But, you know, as someone who's very politically aware, I have to admit that I am so surprised at the level of aggressive and attacking discourse toward the LGBTQ plus community. Today, I thought to some extent, you know, we were beyond that in 2022, 2023, and I'm constantly and horribly disappointed and surprised at what I hear coming out of the legislature and then in the culture, you know, people, your neighbors, you know, people in a store, people that you meet on the street. You know, so I don't know. Is that the kind of thing you hear from your clients, too?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we're talking about, I talk with a lot of parents of LGBTQ plus kids in the Jewish community, and a lot of them are having conversations around, you know, is it safe to stay here as these policies are coming out? You know, I want to take care of my kid. I care about my kid and want them to have access to gender affirming care. I need to possibly leave my community that I've been in for years, which is such a painful choice, particularly when you hold multiple marginalized identities, to leave a community that is very safe for you, to have to do that so that you can save your child's life in a lot of ways is a huge challenge that a lot of families are facing. And, you know, I think when it comes to college or picking like different life milestones, people are having to take these things into consideration.
Sure. I know that, I mean, in my own circles, I've talked to people whose kids were preparing to go to New College, for example, which was a very welcoming place to, you know, LGBTQ plus kids until recently with the takeover by the Hillsdale College people. And all of a sudden, it's no longer a viable choice for those kids and those families.
No, it's not. It's really not, you know, it's unpredictable, like, what's going to happen with the higher education system in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think if we want stability during a time of hostility and crisis, like, it makes sense to me that people are looking elsewhere and trying to figure those things out, but it doesn't come without a mental health cost.
Yeah, and I noticed, Dr. Danny, on your website, which is bravespacepsych.com. Bravespacepsych.com is Dr. Danny's website. We'll get to you in a second, Dr. Gracia. But I noticed that you have an ebook or a guide for parents to help them deal with their kids coming out. I guess primarily directed toward college students, but I guess really at any age, if your kid comes out, you know, they're out. So why did you feel the need for that kind of resource to make it available to people?
Yeah. You know, I think I work with a lot of queer folks, and, you know, we sometimes have easier times, it feels like, finding access to spaces where we have time to process and build community. And I have found that a lot of times parents feel pretty isolated in that experience. And, you know, the impact of homophobia, the impact of transphobia, like, these things impact the entire family system. And so I think that having a supportive resource for parents, like, how do I figure this out? I often say, you know, you can have your process and take your time, but you need to find spaces that are safe for you to do that. And your behaviors need to align with affirmation to save your child's life. Mm-hmm. You need to have space for your own feelings, but the behaviors are really, really important because parents and families and the adults in queer folks' life are really powerful. I saw a statistic by the Human Rights Council that said that 40% reduction in suicide with one adult that is affirming in your life. Like, that is a huge opportunity. And so I really want to do what I can to have, I mean, that resource is free on my website. If you want to have access to that tool so that you can be that person in that kid's life, like, I want you to have that. So that was a really big inspiration for me and driving making that accessible.
That's great. Let me take a call from one of our listeners. Fran from Largo on the line. Fran, you're on the air. Welcome back.
Thank you. I know it's very important that you're addressing all the stresses on people, the LGBTQ people and minorities and all the people that, smaller groups that, they can't really, they're not known for defending themselves well. Now, the thing that this is hard for me to express, but every time I hear things, like when there's gun violence and children are shot in a school, and they always say, oh, the shooter had mental health problems and all of these things, that should have been addressed by mental health experts or something. The real mental health problem to me is the legislators that won't do anything about guns, and they're just going after drag shows and things like that. This is another big mental health problem. I would like to see that addressed.
All right. Okay, well, let me let our guests...
That's my point, okay?
Okay, let me let our guests, respond to that. Thank you for calling, Fran. It is a tragedy in Florida right now that we have so many big problems that affect people in this state, from the lack of affordable housing to adequate public transportation to this insurance crisis that is going to put people out of their homes to our environmental problems. We have really big problems, and yet our legislators are focusing on depersonalizing and trying to erase the culture of less than 1% of our Florida citizens who are just looking to go about living their lives in peace. It's really awful. But going back to the issue of people needing to leave, feeling like they need to leave the state because of this particular issue, I think there will be plenty more people who find they need to leave the state when they start losing their house because they can't get insurance and therefore they can't afford their mortgages since homeowners insurance is required. I think those people are going to be looking to leave the state too. But looking at the issue that is before us, which is families who want to keep their LGBTQ plus and queer kids safe and trans people safe in their lives in Florida. I want to turn to you, Dr. Gracia, and ask you about the fact that on your website, I noticed that you provide or have provided evaluations and letters of support for hormone replacement therapy, gender-affirming surgery, mental health assessment forms for government agencies. All of those things have been required in the past by medical professionals who work in this area, who have provided gender-affirming medical care to clients, to their patients. But now we have this new legislation that's coming. First of all, we have the Florida Board of Medicine that has banned gender-affirming care for minors. And now we have this new legislation that has been proposed to ban gender-affirming care for anybody. You know, how is that going to affect your practice? For example, are you maybe worried that, you know, should you continue to provide that kind of service to your clients that you could yourself be potentially looking at some criminal liability? Is that a topic that comes up in your area of expertise and in your professional circles? Is that something being discussed?
Excuse me. Absolutely. I'm terrified. I'm terrified that I am a target for doing my job, for, you know, practicing the oath that I took, that I would do no harm. My job is to meet clients where they're at and to help them with their suffering. And if I have the power and the privilege to provide someone with documentation that gives them access to that life-saving care, absolutely, without question, I'm going to do that. And it is part of me being a human, and it's part of me being an ally. And this is my community, and I'm dedicated to taking care of them and to not act as a gatekeeper. To me, I would defend this till the day I die. I'd rather be on this side of history. And yes, at the same time, as a gay woman myself, as someone who is has a family and trying to build a family, I do have to look out for the well-being of my family. And I will keep providing this care and support until right, I have to make a really difficult decision.
Yeah, it's going to come up, I'm afraid. Let me take a call here from Sam in Tampa. Sam, you're on the air. Hello?
Hi, Shelley. This is Sam. I'm in the Tampa Bay area. I'm a local anti-discrimination educator. I work a little bit in activism and advocacy as well. And I think it's just appalling the rate at which legislation is coming down so hard on, of all people, young humans. You know, at this point, we are at a place where adults are intentionally targeting young people and youth over something as simple as using their pronouns. I don't understand communities that we live in that can, in any way, shape, or form, condone that kind of behavior. When you know that young humans, that the rate of suicide among young humans drops simply when you use their pronouns or affirm their gender identity or give them a supporting word as an adult, that could save their life.
Yeah.
And that is something that we are preventing from happening.
Yeah, we should add, Sam, that there's new legislation proposed that actually bans teachers and school personnel from using a kid's preferred pronouns in school if it's different from their biological sex that they were identified with at birth. That's legislation.
Correct.
That's legislation that our mm-hmm. legislators have mm-hmm. taken up rather than dealing with the homeowners crisis, for example, to ban the use of preferred pronouns in school.
It's just, it's absolutely heinous. We cannot be living in a society that condones this, right? And we have to fight against living in a society that condones not just this kind of behavior, but the lack of checks and balances when it comes mm-hmm. to even being able to propose such legislation should not be allowed in communities like ours. From a legislative perspective, yes, they are coming down really hard on folks who don't identify within heteronormative gender identities, within heteronormative sexualities, et cetera, they're coming after young humans. And from a legislative perspective, there's a lot that we can do, but there's also a lot that we cannot do. Mm-hmm. And so from a community perspective, what my colleague Erin Wiley and I are doing, like I mentioned earlier, I'm an anti-discrimination educator. So one of the things that both of us are doing is we've launched this program called the Prime Directive. Mm-hmm. If there are any Star Trek fans out there, they're going to be super happy with that title. but the goal of the Prime Directive is it is a two-day anti-discrimination education program.
Okay.
It's a learning program.
Where is it going to be offered, Sam?
Our first session we're offering at Allendale United Methodist Church over in St. Petersburg.
And when is that?
It's going to be on April 15th and April 16th. Folks can sign up at tinyurl.com/theprimedirectivesignup.
Okay.
Right, so it's really simple. If they type in Google, the Prime Directive signup, the signup form should come up. It's a Google form. It's super simple. All they need to do is sign up, and we will get in contact with them with further details. But April 15th and 16th, Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg, and we will talk about all things anti-discrimination. We strongly believe that everyone should be able to talk about discrimination and what we can individually and collectively do about it.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. Well, maybe our guests will be interested in attending that program with you and Aaron Wiley. Well, thanks for calling in, Sam. Appreciate your contribution to the show. Thank you
for doing this.
All right.
Appreciate you.
I have another caller here, Mike from Sarasota. Let's see what Mike has to say. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to offer a perspective on this whole issue of on the whole idea of people leaving Florida and the legislature reacting. Just speaking as someone in their mid-60s and having seen progressive movements throughout my life, what has continually happened in America is that progressive movements, they go too far, they get too radical, and then they draw a backlash. And I'll give you one example. Feminism in the 1980s began to demand that the language be changed. We couldn't talk about male men anymore. We had to talk about male people or con men. We had to talk about con people. And it drew ridicule and a backlash. Now, in regards to the LGBTQ situation, what we've had in recent years is, I think America said, okay, fine, gay marriage is okay, and America went with it. But then we began to have people going too far. For instance, demanding that anybody who self-identified as a woman could go into female bathrooms.
Well, hold up. Let me challenge you. Wait. Let me challenge you on that, because you used the words people began to go too far. You know, that's a value judgment that not everybody agrees with, that's too far.
Okay. Looking at it from the perspective of the mainstream, though, when you start making more increasingly radical demands, you get a backlash.
See, there again, increasingly radical demands. The word radical is also a value judgment that I want to push back on.
Demanding that men be able to participate in women's sports, now that becomes a threat. And so what I'm trying to say is this is not an example of people persecuting transgender. This is people reacting to radical bans from the transgender, and that's what's happening here.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you offering your perspective, Mike. Thanks for calling in. And I think there may be people who do agree with you, but I would challenge some of those value judgments that are baked into your perspective. But thank you for offering it. Appreciate you calling in. I think Mike has a perspective that a lot of people do feel that the rationale for this backlash is that areas of life that people didn't expect that they themselves would have to intersect with people who identify as queer or LGBTQ or trans, now they do, and they're not educated enough or ready enough to meet those people where they are, in the bathroom, in the high school swimming competition, in places like that. I think people who felt like, well, this doesn't affect me and my particular family, I don't, have those people in my family kind of attitude, are now finding that, hey, maybe they do, or maybe they're in the bathroom, or maybe they're in the pool, and they're just not, they're not ready for that. They're not prepared to meet those people in their life where they didn't expect to. I don't know. That's how I see it. What do you think, either of you? Dr. Danny, you're nodding your head.
Yeah. I agree strongly with what you're sharing, Shelley. I think, the phrase that we've gone too far, I would challenge that very deeply, because it's really, to me, it's very simple. I think we've I would agree that we've had a lot of progress. I think we've done a much better job in recent years of affirming the humanity of people in our community who are the most harmed, who feel the most vulnerable. And I think, you know, when I look at the changes that have been made, it is beautiful to see the changes that, you know, young people are thinking about gender and sexuality in such a richer, more expansive way and feeling more comfortable, more safe to come out. And that in some ways, I do feel like this response is because we have done such a beautiful job of creating a world that feels better and safer and more human. And that scares some people. Mm-hmm. I saw something, Equality Florida shared something, I believe, on their website or their social media that said, you know, they were being targeted by some Republican candidates, possibly. It might have been Ron DeSantis. But they said...
Yeah, they came out with... one of the legislators came out with a statement that said that Equality Florida should not be allowed to be a lobbyist to represent their constituency. They shouldn't be allowed to advocate.
Yeah, and what I loved was Equality Florida responded by essentially saying, like, they are focusing on us because what we're doing is working. Like,
right. It matters.
It matters. Like, we are a voice that is being heard, and we are rattling things. And so I think, to me, that's really, you know, what I try to stay grounded in is, I think we were speaking about this a little bit earlier, like, I think Sam was mentioning it, like, the impact of adults, and that there are many adults doing a lot of harm, and there's such an opportunity for adults to be a support for this younger generation. Like, they really need us to show up. And so I talk a lot with folks about, like, what could it look like for you to be that adult ally in our youth's life? And as things become legislated where you can't be having support spaces in the schools the way we did, like, the people in our community, like our temples, our synagogues, our churches, our outside of the faith groups, organizations, mm-hmm. like, this is a time for us to really show up and say, like, we support the vulnerable in our communities, and we're going to live our values in that way and create safety. Like, that's what we really need to be focusing on. And for folks that, you know, are feeling like this is too far, I really invite you to question that. Like, you're uncomfortable, and I understand that, and change can be uncomfortable. And at the same time, like, the impact, the work that you have to do to use somebody's pronouns is so tiny.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I hear a lot about that.
Could I pause you for a second, Shelley? I want to go back to what Danny was saying and what the caller Mike shared. And I do want to say to Mike and all those who share Mike's perspective, thank you for engaging in this conversation with us, mm-hmm. because it took a lot of courage to do that. And I think that shows a lot more ability that it's a moment for us to engage in discussion, which is what we lack, especially from these leaders who are just making decisions without really hearing the public. And I hear you, Mike. You're scared because you don't understand it. So yes, let's have an engaging educational conversation. What we're talking about is making space for marginalized voices to be heard and for their experience to be represented. And when you use the word threat, you feel threat. Well, who is threatened by this? Mm-hmm. Please ask yourself, mm-hmm. what is threatening about a young black trans person wanting to be free, to freely walk through the street and hold hands with their partner? What is threatening about that, mm-hmm. for you? They're not asking anything of you.
Mm. Yeah, that's such an important point. That's such an important point. That's what I always wonder. You know, why do people feel threatened? What, you know, what does it ask of you? Really nothing but respect, you know? Mm-hmm. Nothing but respect. Let me take a call from Christina in St. Petersburg. Christina, you're on the air.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me. I'm on my cell phone.
Yes, hear you fine.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I just really want to say I taught in the public school system in Florida for over 11 years. I'm a theater and film teacher, and I really hope the parents and also community members also that don't have children that are very confused by this and feel threatened by the LGBTQ community in the state are listening. So I'm just going to share my experience and what it was like being on the front lines as a teacher. At one particular very high-profile public school with a wonderful arts program in St. Kitts that I taught at for about 2 years, I won't mention their name, I would say we had about 100 students in the program. A good 85 to 90% of those students openly identified as gay, and perhaps 2%...
Theater kids.
Mm-hmm. Troop 3814, yes. Former president,
yes,
right,
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely, and they were all very open about it, and we were supported heavily by our administrator at that time to make sure they felt protected. More often than not, they wanted to eat lunch in the teacher's classrooms because they didn't feel safe or comfortable in the main cafeteria, particularly the students that identified as transgender. I'm not going to name, obviously, somebody's real name, but I'm going to say that this is a pseudonym. One student in particular, whose legal name was Sally, preferred to be called Bobby. And we were always instructed by our department head and admin to really serve the students' wishes, to go with what the students wanted. And it was a wonderful thing because there was trust between the students and the teachers, and we were all very close. But I will say this, we did have several students that they were not out to their parents, whether they were transgender or gay, and they felt like they had a home in our classroom. And it's already a very tenuous and stressful life that these young people are leading, to have to deal with these feelings. And for our legislature to all of a sudden just pummel us with these anti-LGBTQ laws, I'm very worried about the students. I'm worried about their physical safety, their mental safety.
Right.
Because you're putting these rules on top of an already very tenuous and difficult situation for them.
Right.
So I just wanted to comment on that, and particularly to one of your former callers who kept using the word radical, I want to put that out there to him. He doesn't know what goes on within these classrooms. He doesn't understand the conversations and the fact that the kids come to us and confide in us. And
well, it sounds like they were those kids were lucky to have you, Christina, mm-hmm. as a teacher to support them, as our guests here have mentioned earlier in the show. You know, to have one supportive person in their life makes a huge difference to their, you know, their own mental attitude, their own safety, and their own security. So we appreciate you for offering that to them.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Christina. You know, what's going on in the schools right now, Christina says she was a former teacher, but the teachers who are still in place now in the schools are feeling under such pressure. You know, it's their livelihood. It's their jobs. You know, some of us have the privilege of not having to worry about losing our jobs, especially people who work for free like me on this radio show, you know? There's very little they can take away from me. But people who have to work, you know, who have jobs and who now feel that their, you know, ability to do their jobs in the way that Christina, for example, described in a supportive and loving fashion to these kids in the schools, are also, I assume, have to be under enormous mental health challenges and stresses. Like you, Dr. Darlene, when you express the concern that, hey, I have a family, I have to protect my family, I can't expose myself to criminal liability because of what I choose to do in my psychology practice, in my therapy practice. These teachers must be feeling the same thing. I don't know if you've been hearing from any teachers in that regard.
Absolutely. Yeah? I think whenever I talk to teachers, I just feel an immense amount of gratitude for their bravery, for the work that they do to care for the children of our community. And absolutely, they are on the front lines, as the teacher that called in shared. And I think something that gets lost in sometimes in these discussions is like, what are we really talking about when we're talking about the risk here? And to me, it is absolutely a public health crisis, mm-hmm. what is happening to our LGBTQ+ youth and LGBTQ plus community at large. And if it's okay, I'll share a statistic from the Trevor Project. They actually did a study specifically on the Florida youth last year. And the numbers are startling. Like 45% of LGBTQ youth in Florida seriously considered suicide in 2022. They 54% of trans and non-binary youth considered suicide in 2022. 16% attempted suicide of LGBTQ plus youth in Florida. 20% of trans and non-binary youth in Florida attempted suicide. And then when we talk about anxiety and depression, 73% of LGBTQ plus youth in Florida reported experiencing symptoms of anxiety. This goes up to 77% for trans and non-binary youth. And 60% of LGBTQ plus youth in Florida reported symptoms of depression. And it goes up to 67% for trans and non-binary youth. So we are talking about a community that is being really impacted by mental health risks. And so when we're thinking about them and like how we support them, how we provide care, that is where health providers are coming in and saying, this is a crisis. What works? What helps people have an experience of relief from gender dysphoria, an experience of relief from the anxiety and depression and the impact of a hostile political climate? And what can we do? How do we collaborate with parents to get these children and the adults in our community the care that is life-saving that they need? And I mean, teachers, the people in our community broadly, whether you have kids or not, like we are all impacted by the loss of the lives of these youth. And so, you know, this idea of like, oh, I don't want to use pronouns, or I've heard people, even well-intentioned people, like say things like, well, if I want to be a goat, then I can be a goat today.
Right.
Whatever it is. And it's like, no, we have to humanize this experience. So we have to see it for what it really is. We're talking about what a tiny, incredible offer that you could make to use someone's pronouns to have it be life-saving. Mm-hmm. Like it means something so big. I know in my Jewish community, saving a life is one of our highest values. And this is such an incredible way that we can offer that by, you know, and it doesn't mean it's easy. I know that if someone's asking you to use non-binary pronouns like they, them, it is different than how we've learned about grammar. But we can do it. Like, mm-hmm. It is something we can practice. And, you know, I was talking to a trans person recently who was saying, like, they feel loved by their family. They really genuinely do. But the fact that it's been years and their family still has struggled to practice they, them pronouns really impacts them. It weighs on their heart and makes them feel less affirmed, less cared for, less seen. Mm-hmm. And so that to me is really what we're asking of our community. Can we see each other? Can we see the people in our community that are the hurting the most and make space for them? And yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for offering that. And I think those statistics are important for people to know, because I do think that when you consider this as a public health crisis, it gives a little bit of a different perspective mm-hmm. than just a sort of a cultural moment, you know? Mm-hmm. My phones are blown up here, so I'm going to take another call if you guys are willing.
Let's do it.
Okay. I have a caller, not sure how to pronounce your name. Nibidi, you're an attorney. Hello? You're on the air.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes. How do you pronounce your name?
Yeah. Nibidi. Can you hear me?
What? Yes, I can hear you.
Perfect. Good morning. Yeah. I wanted to say, first and foremost, say thank you for the, having the discussion. Thank you for the former teacher that made the comments about being a refuge for children. I just want to play devil's advocate. I'm always fearful of having children have privileges with adults that aren't their parents. And I understand the life-changing, life-saving services are provided. All the statistics are very much so evident. And as a Black Jew, I understand the importance of saving your life. So thank you, individual who on the program today. I don't want to go about projecting in pronouns. But as I see it all the time, I'm fearful of adults taking advantage of the refuge of that dialogue. And I do see an importance of a teacher being able to adhere to the request of parents saying, what are you calling my child? What are you saying to my child?
Well, you know what? I respect that opinion. And I just want to offer this and get a response from my guest. I saw a tweet the other day that I thought was so interesting. Somebody tweeted a similar opinion to yours and said, you know, I think it's kind of a problem that that the people in this school know that my son who leaves the house in the morning is as Sam wants to be known as Samantha in school. And I think that's kind of a problem. And one response to that tweet was, if you don't already know that about your child, the problem is you. You're the problem. And I thought that that was really, really an interesting response, because I think that that's, you know, not that uncommon. And maybe my psychologist here can comment, but I think that that's not that uncommon, that kids, you know, try out their identities in places like school before they try out their identities at home. But if they have a family at home that they feel is supportive and who they talk to and are open with, then, you know, that parent would know that their kid wanted to be Samantha at school. And then there wouldn't be any divergence in what the parent knew and what the school knew at all. Right? I mean, do you find that that's true, that kids are more open at school oftentimes among their peers than they are about their parents? I mean, come on. It's no different from smoking pot, you know, or, you know, having sex or whatever. Kids, you know, are more open with their peers and sometimes with adults who are supportive in the school atmosphere than they are with their own parents.
100%. I think you said it really well.
Thanks for your call, too.
Shelley. That, you know, in the LGBT community, we have this expression, and maybe different folks use it different terms, but for me, I call it chosen family.
Right.
Right? This idea that depending on who my parents are, what their beliefs are, what culture we come from, they're not all going to be accepting or understanding, because they may be wedded to certain beliefs that, sure, they are entitled to, but certain beliefs don't see me for who I am. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes means that my biological family doesn't see me for who I am. And so if I'm thinking about coming out or trying to be seen by others, I'm going to look for that in other humans and build community around that. And a lot of times in the coming out process, we do try it out on those that we feel are safe to do so. And most of the time, a lot of my clients leave their parents for last, because they're so terrified, because they love these humans so much, because they want that relationship, but they're so terrified that their parents will reject them and that they'll lose that relationship that they have to hide. Right. And so they seek support and reassurance and validation from other adults that they feel are safe. And so that's why I think Dr. Danny's resource for parents and her work with parents is so critical, because not all homes are affirming.
And the other thing I'd say is like respectfully challenging that idea, in the sense of like, okay, so you don't know that about your child. You don't agree, perhaps. Maybe you don't think it's okay that they use that name, that they go by Samantha, that they ask for different pronouns. But if the ultimate like result of a teacher taking the risk to affirm your child is that they are alive the next day, I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Like if that's what we're talking about here.
Risk reward is worth it.
Like
yeah.
We're talking about life saving of our children. And if they're going home and thinking that, you know, that's to me the
All
bottom
right.
line.
I'm going to take one more call from Jerry, who's been very patient. Jerry, you're on the air, but make it quick.
Thank you. I just want to say that, you know, having a minority group being demonized can have certain effects. I am a victim of hate crime in a very rural area. I was taking cosmetology as a kid. I had dated a girl, and this guy beat me up because I dated this girl, but he was using gay, you're gay, you know, blah, 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 during the beatdown with him and another guy. And
I'm sorry that happened to you.
That's okay. But, you know, it taught me a lesson that people will use hate to bring up any kind of ignorance towards another person. And it really taught me a lesson. And I think a lesson of acceptance, I should say, because I know there's going to be people out there. And in my small town, if I had brought that abuse or that beatdown to the sheriff in my hometown in rural areas, which I think are underserved, I would have been the gay boy that got beat down, not the straight guy who was beat down because I was dating his ex-girlfriend.
Right.
And this happened many years ago, 1987. So I'm sure that they'll just use this as an excuse to go after especially minorities. Mm-hmm. And other people of other races as well.
Well, thank you for calling in, and I'm sorry for your experience, Jerry, but thank you for sharing it with us. We appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Sure. I'm going to let my guests respond briefly. We're getting toward the end of the show, so...
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that makes me think about is some of these bills around the bathroom use.
Uh-huh.
And, like, how simple it is as a safety measure to let people go into the bathroom that feels affirming for them, or to have access to gender-neutral bathrooms,
mm-hmm.
And to see that our state is trying to make that option illegal is just deeply painful for such a basic human need. It's
right.
Like almost like mind-blowing that that's what we're talking about, but we're talking about safety, like for people to have access to a restroom that feels safe for them. So thank you for bringing that up.
All right, Charles, I'm going to let you speak very briefly because we're at the end of the show. So what you've been patient. What do you have to offer? You with us?
Can you hear me there?
Yes.
Hey, this is Charles. Just calling with like an experience and a reflection. I went to high school at a really prominent private school in St. Pete in the 2000s, like the early aughts. And there wasn't a lot of homophobia there, but not only was I like one of the only black students there, but I was also closeted to my friends and my family, everyone. And just reflecting on that now, like years later, you know, having any kind of resource like an LGBT alliance or a faculty member that just made it known that, you know, they were the person to go to for anything like that would have been, you know, just save a person a lot of grief, like save a person a lot of, it's just life-saving, just like you guys are saying. So
just to have a safe space in school.
Exactly. To even have that extended, you know, there was nothing, there were in between the year, you know, before I finished high school in like 2010, there was nothing like that. You know, there was nothing, it just didn't go there. And I'm happy for teachers like Christine or anyone else who's now making pushes to make that more of a thing. Cause it's like, that is a tough road. It's very lonely.
Yeah.
It's very anxiety inducing. And so you do your best to get on the other side of it through your life. But
it gets
kind of
better, right? Remember that campaign for the.
It absolutely does. Yeah. Right. It was a thing back then. And in fact, it does very much get better, but it takes a lot of work. And I really hope that kids these days are having an easier time working through all of that because it's stressful. It's very stressful.
All right. Thank you for sharing that with us, Charles. Sorry for your early years experience, and happy to hear that you're on the other side of it now. So
we're doing better. Thanks
for calling in. Okay. We have just a couple minutes to ask you if there's anything else you want to leave our listeners with before we wrap up. Very briefly.
Yeah, thank you so much. There's so much to say on this topic, but I think, thank you, Charles, for sharing that and for affirming that we need to create safe spaces, that representation matters, and that, yeah, we're just trying to have our voice heard and all of us have an opportunity to live our true selves.
Right.
I just want to say thank you for everyone who participated, and for the LGBTQ+ folks that are listening and your families, like, we love you and we're here. Like, please do not feel like you have to do this alone.
And speaking of that, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Danny Rosenkrantz, whose website is bravespacepsych.com, and Dr. Darlene Gracia, whose website is crossingbridgepsych.com. If you need them, they're there for you. Go to their website. You can find their phone numbers and speak to them yourselves. I want to thank all my listeners for calling in and sharing their experiences, and thank you for being with us today. To my guests and offering us their counsel about how we can support our marginalized friends in the LGBTQ and trans communities. And I want to thank my WMNF volunteers, Jessica Green, who runs sound for me, and Barbara Fling, who answered our phones today and who all helped make this show work. Remember, our shows are all archived for your listening pleasure on demand at wmnf.org/midpoint. And we're available as a WMNF Midpoint podcast the day after the show airs from wherever you get your podcast. So if you joined us late, you can always go back and listen on demand. And you can show your support for WMNF and midpoint by dropping a donation in our tip jar. We'd be very grateful. Now, stay tuned for the NPR News. And then Talking Animals with Duncan Strauss is up. He has a very special show today that includes his interview with the primatologist and naturalist Jane Goodall. We are WMNF Tampa. Time is truly wasted.